Welcome back, everybody, to your Aviation Stories episode of the month for December.
Yay! Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. I'm Nick.
I'm Miranda.
And I'm Christy.
Hey.
Hi. Hello. Hi. So, we're going to start off with Christy.
So, this month was all holiday stories of, frankly, any variety, because that's what's going to happen. So our first story is from our friend David from Augusta, Georgia, or as he likes to say, Disgusta, Georgia. And the title of this story is Blue Christmas Sorta. At SkyWest, Eugene, Oregon, we had two airplanes to put to bed at night. One was the Canada Air RJ-200 from Salt Lake City, and the other was the now-defunct TriStar Airlines BAE-146-100 or Avro RJ-100, or pretty much extinct now in the 2000s. Back in the 90s, it was alive and well. Once all the passengers had left and the crew was whisked away to the Red Lion Hotel bar, three of four of us cleaned and serviced the airplanes. Usually two or three would work on cleaning inside and one of us would do the outside stuff. One night, I pulled a really dirty diaper from behind the Barbie-sized trash can in the CRJ lavatory. I had to run outside before I puked. I then volunteered to do the outside stuff after that night.
Nice. Ew. Come on, friends.
Ugh.
Didn't we just cover CRJ 200?
Yes.
Yes.
We did.
Fun fact.
That doesn't come out before this will, probably.
You have a CRJ 200 coming in your future.
Okay. It should be next week from when you guys are hearing this.
Yeah.
The CRJ was straightforward. Drag the potable water cart to the inlet hookup and pump away. The lav dump was on the right side between the engine and the back of the wing. It was low, easy to hook up the dump hose and blue juice hose to refill the tank. The 146 was different. The potable water tank was inside the airplane on the right side between the pit door and the landing gear, I think. It was, after all, 20-something years ago. The lav dump was on the left side between the passenger door and cockpit and a kind of high off the ground. Being a short mofo...
Hey! We can make a club!
I had to strain a bit to get the dump hose to latch on the fitting. One night in December, I didn't quite get the rings engaged all the way, and when I was pulling the lever to open the dump valve, the hose jumped off, and in an excruciating slow motion, as in a time distortion, I saw a blue blob heading for my chest.
Oh, no.
Ew.
I saw things in that blue blob, things I don't want to think about that I will never unsee as long as I live. There was a loud splat as it hit me and the ramp, and suddenly it was over. I looked down at myself, walked calmly to the dumpster, took my keys and wallet out of my pockets, took off all my clothes and threw them in. I then took the water hose, and on that 40-something degree night, I stood naked on the ramp and hosed myself off.
Oh.
Hey, listen, I don't blame him for a second. That stuff is nasty.
My coworkers were very sympathetic, and thankfully there was no such thing as a cell phone camera back then.
Oh.
I was given a yellow Gordon's of Gloucester rain suit to wear and drove home to take the longest and most thorough shower I've ever had. The next night, a small but just big enough stepladder appeared for short mofos like me to make sure that the fitting was placed securely. I gotta say, though, the blue juice did a fine job of masking the smell of what I saw in that blob, though, that I still cannot unsee.
Oh, gosh. I don't even want to think about it. Also, we took a picture recently of the three of us for a holiday thing for our patrons, and I had to stand on a box, so I get it.
Yeah, it's true.
Because we tried doing it with me standing normally. And to be fair, I am easily 8 inches shorter than these two.
Yeah.
Easily. It didn't work, so I had to stand on a box.
Hey, the picture turned out okay.
It turned out pretty good, yeah.
So.
Woo.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now my turn. This one is also from our friend David in Disgusta, Georgia. This one is entitled Christmas at an Airport. Pretty straightforward. He said, I didn't mind working the holidays at all. I was newly divorced, my parents had divorced, and one lived in Georgia and the other in Texas, and I was in Colorado. I volunteered to work Christmas, which gave those with families and traditions a chance to get together. However, Christmas Eve was rough. We had weather delays on all of our inbound flights because of problems in Sioux Falls and Boise. People got downright nasty, and one of our counter people got to the point that he'd just stand there and let the person talk him or herself out. Then Larry, not his real name, would say, if you're through acting like a child, I can help you.
Oh!
Yes, this is not typically a thing you should ever say to a customer.
I've told these two multiple times that I want to be a grumpy gate agent when I retire.
Yeah.
It would be great. I would love to say that to somebody.
Yeah. His line following that is, which hardly ever worked out. I don't know why. Obviously sarcasm. Larry had been at the airline for 20-something years and had seen it all. I mean, what can you do about snow and ice?
Nothing. Literally nothing.
Literally nothing. We handed out Ron, which is remaining overnight, kits like candy, which seemed to placate those who had to go to the few hotels in Grand Junction. Finally, at 3 a.m. on Christmas Day, our last delayed flight had gone, and our overnighter had arrived. It was a single solitary Embraer 120 Brasilia turboprop, and Connie and I had it cleaned up and buttoned up by 4 a.m. She went home to her family, and I decided to stay there at the station. I microwaved some water in a mug and dumped in powdered hot chocolate and sipped at it in the garage with tugs and looked out the window. The big red mesas on the other side of the runway were obscured by foggy, snowy skies, and the snow swirled around like little pellets of styrofoam. The wind would shake the garage door, making it rattle in the frame. A small gust of icy wind would blop in from the sides of the garage door. My hot chocolate got cold pretty fast, so I went back into the office and heated it again and broke out some honey roasted peanuts I had taken from the airplane. A grand supper. When the printer made me jump as it rattled out an update from dispatch, all flights canceled due to weather. Great, I thought. More wrangling with the public. That was why I stayed a ramper. No people to deal with. The view out of the airport began to lighten as the unseen sun began to rise. Another day.
Huh. It seems like it would be nice.
It would. I had days kind of like that when I worked at the flight school. You know, it would be pretty quiet. It would be snowing, and so we'd have a lot of cancellations and stuff. Some people wouldn't be very happy about that, and I was the person that dealt with people. But I was also a ramper, so I would go work with the airplanes. And I spent a lot of those snowy days outside plowing and shoveling snow. But that was okay. I didn't mind.
Did you get to plow with the tug?
I did, yeah.
Okay, good.
we had a plow on the front of our little tug thing. It was really a four-wheeler. But that's fine. Hey, it was fun. But then I would get to go inside and sip on hot chocolate. And
yeah, you guys had a lot of hot chocolate and tea there.
We did. And I would watch the snow.
All right. Our next story is from someone in Portland. Their name that they gave us is L-Dub. I like to believe that that's a cool nickname.
L-Dub.
Portland, Oregon, I should say. There is more than one Portland.
Dave from PDX.
Yeah, that's what they said. I asked Christy, I'm like, that's Portland, Oregon, right? She's like, yeah. I was like,
yes.
Oh, I do know some things. So this is called Only in My Dreams. Not so much a story, but funny to think about. I'm quite neurotic about flying, ever since my first flight when I was 5. I remember being on the plane telling my mom that my tummy was making pancakes. As an adult, my fear seems a bit overkill. I can't quite make sense of it. The other part of this is that as long as I can remember, I have had dreams about seeing planes crashing. Usually different dreams, but always the planes crash. I'm obsessed with plane crashes. I watch, listen, and read everything I can find on the subject. You are listening
Hello.
To the correct podcast.
That's
then.
Us.
My biggest obsession is UA-232.
Hey.
Cool.
We did that one.
I will say that when this happened, I was living in Chicago. I was waitressing at a restaurant at a mall. One day, the bartender shared with us that he just had served a guy who had some cuts, etc., on his face. He told the bartender that this had been his first day back at work after an accident. It was one of the pilots on UA-232.
Damn.
Wow.
Wow. I guess the moral of this story that I didn't think was a story, I think that I died in a plane crash in a previous life. Wow.
Wow.
That's powerful.
That's
it is.
Huge.
That's pretty crazy, though. That is pretty amazing.
Glad you're listening, I guess.
Yes, you have found us. Thank you.
All right, the last listener story that we have is from David. Thank you for perpetuating this little experiment that we've created.
It's okay.
This one, he says he's from a blue dot in a red sea. Take that as you will. And the title is Gaseous Exquisitions.
Ew.
Ugh.
That does not sound good at
his
all.
His first story was nasty.
I picked all the nasty ones. Blech. Don't know if it has something to do with pressure doing something to our bodies when climbing, but the excretions of gaseous material, you know, farting, seem to increase amongst us as we gained more altitude. And most of it really stunk. When I was a novice jumper, we had a newish pilot taking us up. Jeff, the guy of nearly drowning in stampedes, cut the cheese.
Yeah, that guy.
It was horrific. More like a presence than a smell.
Ooh.
Oh, boy. Now, Jeff was in the student position in the 182 next to the pilot on the floor facing aft. All seats are gone except the pilot's, and the second yoke has been removed, and a sheet of plywood has been mounted to cover the hole where the rudder pedals are at and to give the jumper something to lean against while seated. The pilot yelled bad words and asked who did it. Jeff proudly yelled, "I did!" Suddenly, the 182 climbed quite sharply and as suddenly went nose down, causing us to float up off the floor.
Oh.
The pilot reached over Jeff and opened the door and pushed Jeff out as he was hovering.
This pilot is brilliant.
I think that's amazing. That only works because you know they're skydiving.
Yeah. Well, when he's in zero gravity, he doesn't have to lift the guy. The guy's already floating. He just grabs him and throws him out the window.
The other three of us were shocked. One second he was there, the next, gone! When back to straight and level, we crowded the windows on the right side to try and see a canopy. What we saw was a parachute and I-75.
Oh, no.
Luckily, Jeff found more cows to scare. Different ones than before, and a nice open pasture to land in. The soon-to-be fired pilot called the drop zone on the radio and told them where Jeff was and got us over the drop zone. We just bombed the door and flew a quick three-way. An hour later, Jeff was back, the pilot was gone, and Jeff got drunk.
Yeah.
Oh, jeebus.
Down in Zephyr Hills, Florida, at a boogie, we were in 40 Tango, the Z Hills DC-3. I was sitting up near the Ford bulkhead next to Ron. The plane was crowded, hot, and suddenly really smelly.
Ooh.
A gaseous excretion had occurred.
That's what I'm going to call farts for now
on. Oh, God.
Faces were being buried in jumpsuits to hide from it. The co-pilot yelled, "We're about to puke up here!" Ron began to dry heave and crawled to the open door to stick his head out. A very cute and petite girl smiled and yelled, "I fluffed!" "Fluff hell," yelled someone else. I see the paint peeling off the wall. Once it almost went away, things went back to normal. Until someone else fluffed, that is.
Wow. Yuck.
Blech.
Blech.
Gaseous excretions.
Ew.
That's a weird one.
That is a weird one.
I mean, I've only gone up in an unpressurized plane like twice.
Yeah.
Three times.
Yes.
I didn't.
And we never went that high, though.
No, that's true. Because
in an unpressurized going up, they typically go up to 13,000 for drops. So up that high.
Yeah,
there's some pressure changes happening to your body.
I don't know. You used to go mountain climbing.
Yeah, but that's a slow. And that's true. There was gas. But, you know, up there, nobody's around you. As opposed to being trapped in a little tiny
airplane.
Tube.
Yeah.
A box.
Yeah.
So
Yuck.
Thank you, everyone, for your listener stories. And we have some stories of our own. 5 years ago now, Nick, Brendan, my little brother Jay, and I, we went on a cruise out of Miami. It was a lot of fun. We went and did the Western Caribbean on a 7-day cruise with Carnival, which I'll never do again.
Too many little kids.
But on our way there, we took United there.
Yes.
And I had 19?
Yes.
Yes.
Was 19 at the time. I at 19 had booked us a hotel to stay in because we were flying in late at night. I think we got there at like 11 midnight, something like that. And we weren't due to leave port until like 2 p.m. the next day. So I just wanted us to not sleep at the airport. And so we found the shuttle, got to the hotel. We get there and they're like, "Oh, you have to be 21 to book this hotel." Well, Nick and Brendan were still 20. And Jay was 16.
Right.
So we all had to get back. I think we got back in the shuttle. Or did we take an Uber?
We had to take an Uber back.
Oh, yeah. You remember, it was the guy in the minivan, right?
Yeah, it was the guy in the minivan.
And so then we went and spent the night in Miami International Airport while they were playing Let It Snow and Jingle Bells.
which in Miami, I'm sorry, it was 80 something degrees at night.
It was ridiculous.
It's not snowing there.
So that's the only reason that I hate Miami. It's nothing against the airport itself. It was just having, and we didn't even really sleep.
Although the terminal that Frontier has there, which is the only one I've ever been in, is boring. Because we also arrived with United. It was kind of the same thing. It was boring.
Jay was the only one of us who slept. Nick and Brendan played the world's longest game of war.
Yeah.
I think you eventually won.
I eventually won. That game went on for like 3 hours.
And at 4:30, I was like, is the Starbucks open yet? And I went and got us all Starbucks. Because, yeah. And then at like 6, 7 o'clock, Nick's dad calls us from their hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And is like, oh, you guys want to sleep? Well, I'll come get you and you can take a nap before we go to the port.
Sure did.
That's exactly what happened.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah, I mean, first of all, that was all very weird because a lot of hotels will still let you stay if you're 18, but this one didn't, unfortunately.
It was weird because you booked it, but you couldn't check in because you weren't 21.
Right.
Yeah, I had booked it over the phone while we were waiting to board.
And you had asked.
Yeah, while we were waiting to board at Denver, I called, I gave my driver's license information, my date of birth, and no one said anything.
It was just, yeah, that
was
frustrating.
Did they charge you? Still?
They did not charge us until check-in.
Right, so they didn't end up charging us, period.
Okay, well, that's good. At least you didn't have to spend money on it, then.
I would have been pissed.
Yeah. But, yeah, there was probably more comfortable places we could have been in that airport, quite frankly. I mean, I know we went to a quiet place where there weren't
I think that
people.
Was more important to us than anything.
We just went to a place where there weren't people. But they did have the music
with
all night.
With outlets.
Yes, with outlets. They did have the music all night, and then there was, like, the stupid announcements would come on.
Oh, my God.
Like, the music was playing, and then the announcement would come on, and it would go from, like, to, please don't leave your baggage unattended within the Miami airport. Oh, my God. It was so horrible. And it would happen, like, every 3 minutes. I hope I peaked.
Oh, you did.
That was the intention. And in any case, so, yeah, I mean, we probably could have found a more comfortable place to be because that airport, honestly, like, when you're walking around outside of security, is massive. I have never walked the whole thing, but it's actually massive. And it is also just terrible.
It's okay. We slept all that night. We've talked about this, I think, on a post episode before, but on a cruise ship, when you have an interior room and it's pitch black and you have the slight rocking motion of the ship, it is so easy to sleep.
It's just quiet.
And you don't have to wake up.
Yeah. And you don't have a phone to look at or anybody texting or calling you. You're just out.
But when you do wake up, you have an all-you-can-eat breakfast with lox.
I know.
Or you can go to one of the dining rooms.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So good.
Anyways. Yeah. That was an interesting thing to do around the holidays. My holiday story doesn't have anything to do with Christmas or the holiday season, per se. Mine is on July 4th. I was 11 at the time. So it was July 4th while I was 11 years old. And my dad and I were heading to Europe, but we had this whole trip basically planned out. It was a very long story, but he was kind of planning on maybe moving back to Europe at the time. So we were going for a pretty long trip, and on the way we were going to stop in a few places along the East Coast that are pretty important. So he had some friends in New York, so the first place we were going to go was New York. But to get there, the easiest way was for us to actually go through Philly. So we went to Philadelphia first. And so we ended up flying on July 4th from Denver to Atlanta on AirTran, which is now gone, defunct. Pretty decent airline. And then from Atlanta up to Philly. And we arrived at Philly at night, and I remember distinctly going down the highway and watching the fireworks go off all around us. But it's really interesting to at least have had that experience, sort of, where I got to spend, you know, July 4th in Philadelphia. That doesn't probably mean anything to people that live there, but you have to remember that's where so many things of this nation, so many parts of this nation's history were built.
Yeah.
Is Philly. And so to be there, to me, felt like a really big deal. you know? Even if we were just driving on the highway watching the fireworks go off around us as we're driving through the middle of Philadelphia on the way to a hotel that was far away in a rental car. But it was still, it was really cool. And then the cool part about that was then, so I spent July 4th there. And then we spent some time along the East Coast, and then eventually we ended up in Europe. And I got to spend the 14th of July in France, which is their, quote-unquote, Independence Day. Mm. Very similar to our celebration. We got to watch fireworks there. And then on the 21st of July, I got to spend it in Belgium, right next door, which that's basically their Independence Day. So I got to spend,
Jesus.
I got to spend three Independence Days in one July.
Also, can we talk about how all three are in the same month?
Yes, I know. Crazy, right?
July's the month to become your own country.
I guess, if you're in the West.
It's the month to revolt.
I guess. So it was, you know, that was kind of fun being able to do all these different, you know, Independence Day celebrations, basically three in a row, all in one month. So that was kind of cool. I don't have any, I wish I had more like holiday season aviation stories, but I really don't.
So I have one. So I know we've talked about this story in a post episode before, mm-hmm. but those of you who are not a patron, you will not have heard the story yet. So I'm going to tell it. So this happened actually around Thanksgiving. And basically what happened was we had planned, the three of us, I think it was 2018?
Okay.
17? I don't remember the exact year. We were planning to go to Orlando.
Oh, yeah.
And it was actually the week before the week of Thanksgiving we were planning to go. So,
was that when it was? Wow.
No, yeah. I thought it was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
That's the day we went.
Oh.
Yeah. It was supposed to be the week before that Saturday. Yeah.
Right.
So, okay. Here's what happened. Here's why we couldn't go when we wanted
Clearing this up.
So, we had wanted to go before fall break because everything was going to get more expensive. Mm-hmm. Like, to get where we wanted to go was going to be more expensive. So, we were going to take a red eye to Orlando and go to Universal and ride a couple of rides and then come back. And we were supposed to have a lot of time on the ground, which we ended up having anyway when we went.
Yeah.
So, I get in the shower and get ready to, like, go to bed at, like, 5 o'clock or whatever mm-hmm. because we had a red eye. We left at, like, I don't know, 12:30 in the morning or something like that.
Something
so
like that.
I was going to take a nap because I can't sleep on planes. So I get out of the shower and I'm getting ready for bed and I get a notification on my phone that says, your flight has been canceled. And I go, excuse me? What do you mean it's been canceled? So I call these two and they go, what? I'm like, yeah, I got a Google notification that says it was canceled.
And I started going through stuff and I didn't see anything in several places that said it was canceled yet.
Yeah, so they come and pick me up. We get in the car and we were flying Frontier. So Nick's on the phone with a Frontier person
right.
trying to figure out what's going on. Well, this is the day that the battery blew up at Orlando.
Yeah,
International Airport.
Somebody's camera battery blew up in the X-ray machine.
So they closed the entire airport. So all flights got canceled.
Yeah, it ended up affecting, like, I think 14 flights, which actually wasn't very many, but ours was one of them.
Yeah. And I think part of that is because it happened so late in their arrival times and stuff.
Yeah.
That our flight was affected. So what we ended up doing was we went back to Nick's mom's condo. Where she was living at the time. Mm-hmm. And we watched Ghost Adventures and ate cookies and pizza and stuff all yep. night.
Through the night.
and we rebooked. So we had bought seats on that flight too. I don't remember if we got them.
They had to change some of them. They put us as best as they could, but they had to change them.
That was also the night that we really discovered AJR.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because AJR is the best. Anyway, so we have to rebook literally the next week on Wednesday, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. So we look up what that's going to mean. Well, fun fact, you have to pay like $20 extra to get into Universal when yep. it's on a really like a open week or a week where there's like
yeah, the special
like fall break and winter break and stuff because kids are off, so more people will be at the park, so they increase the rates. So we get to Orlando at like 5 a.m. We go to Cracker Barrel.
I think we actually landed at like 4:30.
Something like that. We didn't get out of the airport till 5.
Yeah.
At least.
Undoubtedly.
So we get an Uber. We go to, or not an Uber, a Lyft. And we go to Cracker Barrel because, gosh, it was good food, man.
Yes. And they're open.
Yes. And they were open. So, and we had a really, really nice server. And we ate some food. And then we got a Lyft to go to Universal. When we got there, the park hadn't opened yet, but you could get in line to get in. So we upgraded our tickets because we had to, and we got ready to go into the park. And fun fact, we have all our stuff with us. So we have jackets, pillows, blankets.
Like winter coats, we're talking.
Everything.
Winter coats, backpacks.
We're in Florida.
Yeah. So, to be fair, it was cold.
Was cold, and we had tried to sleep on an airplane, so.
Yeah. So, it was, I'm pretty sure it was snowing here.
Yeah, I think it was snowing here.
And it was 80 degrees in Florida.
Yeah.
So, there you go. I'm like wearing a long sleeve shirt. And we're going to Florida.
How did Florida come up in all of our holiday stories?
I don't know.
Anyways.
Anyway, so we get to Orlando, we land, etc. So we go on a ride. The first ride we go on is the Jurassic Park ride.
Yeah.
In Orlando, which is great because I am obsessed with Jurassic Park. If you didn't already know that, I'm obsessed. So we went on that ride because I really, really wanted to go. And then we went into Harry Potter World to go on rides there. Well, fun fact, you can't take stuff with you on rides. Like Disney lets you take stuff if it fits in the pocket, right. Or they'll let you put it on the other side of the ride. Universal doesn't do that. They have tiny, tiny lockers you can put stuff in.
Yeah.
So I was able to shove my stuff into a locker the first Harry Potter ride we went on, but these two didn't. So what ended up happening for most of the rides was Christy and I would go on and Nick would hold all our stuff.
Yeah.
And then Nick would go on as a single rider and we'd hold everything else.
I sat next to a lot of awkward other single riders.
So there was actually one ride he couldn't go on, which I felt really bad because he waited in line us for like 2.5 hours.
It doesn't matter.
It wasn't even that good of a ride.
I was tired at that point. I didn't care. Trust me. I was like, dude, that's fine. I'm just going to sit here. It's fine.
And then, so we actually got in line for the wand demonstration, which I didn't know was the wand demonstration. And we get into this little tiny little room. There's like 1,000 kids in front of us.
Yeah.
And the parents are like standing with us because you have to like make an oval, right? And they have to choose someone to do the demonstration. And I was like, it's for sure going to be a tiny kid, you know?
Yeah.
That's like the thing.
Definitely makes sense.
No, they choose me?
Yeah. They did.
And I don't know. It might be because they were like, if we choose her, she might buy the wand we give her. And guess what? I did.
Yep. So, sure did.
At the end of the day, we didn't go on very many rides because we didn't have a lot of time. So we've only been to about 5% of Universal Orlando.
Yeah. I mean, we were still there for a long time, it felt like. But yeah, you'd have to be there for days to do it all.
It's because we had to stand in line and wait and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. We had a red eye home. So
sort of. I mean, it's not a red eye if you're going west.
It was late.
But if you're going westbound, it's not a red eye, but it is a late flight. So we left there, I think at like, I don't even know what it was.
11:30 or something like that?
It must have been 8 or 9 o'clock, actually, and we got home about 10 to 11 o'clock at night because we were on the ground for 14 and a half hours. To this day, I think it is still the longest day trip we have done.
It is, by far.
As of yet. There was one that I came across that would have been longer, but we never did it.
It was a lot of fun, though. I high-key enjoyed myself.
Yeah.
So there's another story for you.
It's a good memory.
It is a good memory. The fact that, you know, a camera exploded and we couldn't go the first time. Yeah.
Hey, I mean, it was good stuff.
It was. We eventually got to go, so there's that.
Yeah.
And we watched Ghost Adventures and ate cookies and cookie dough.
Yes, we did. And pizza. And we made other stuff, too. I can't even remember what else we made. like grilled cheeses. And I have a story from going to Kansas.
Oh, I do have one story I could tell. Anyways, I do. I have a really good one, actually.
Okay, so I'm going to tell my Kansas story.
Continue.
So I have family, my mom's side of the family has some family in Kansas, which, by the way, if you've ever been to Kansas, there's nothing. It's literally flat ground pasture Kansas.
There's nothing.
Till you hit Topeka, and then you blink, and then there's nothing again.
Yep.
So we were driving into Kansas to visit family around the holidays. I don't remember exactly when. And I was like, I don't know, maybe 12 or 13. And we're driving into Kansas. And it was going to take us like 4.5 hours to get there. Well, fun fact, it was snowing.
Woohoo.
Like a lot. Boy. Now, we're in Big Bertha. Okay. She was a beast in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like fine.
A Pacifica for all those who don't know.
Yeah, it was actually just Pacifica.
I've mentioned it. I think I mentioned it in the last story I told. But we called my mom's Pacifica Big Bertha. Because it was so wide.
That's fair.
So we're in the car. My mom's driving. She's been driving for, I don't know, 2.5 hours maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And the snow finally breaks. So she starts speeding up a little bit. Because we were like basically in blizzard conditions for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to, I don't know, maybe 90% of the where we're going, which is Colby, Kansas. And she gets pulled over.
Oh, boy.
By a Kansas cop for going like 5 over the speed limit. It was ridiculous. And she goes, crap. Because when you, those of you who don't know, if you get stopped over state lines, the ticket price is ridiculously
high.
Yes,
it is.
Because you're not in your state anymore. So that was great. We get to where we're going. And my uncle JB, who passed away, I think, last year, he's my great uncle. So he's quite old. He's like in his 80s, almost 90s. And we visit the farm and we're chilling out there and they're going to a pig roast. So we get in his Buick Century and he hightails it out of there in the snow, going like 70 miles an hour down a country road.
Great.
I definitely thought I was going to die. He's not wearing a seatbelt. And we're all like, God save us. So we're heading back to Colorado after our trip. And we stop in Brighton, Colorado. Or Burlington, not Brighton. And there's a carousel there. And we ride the carousel. And it was a good time. Not great going to Kansas in the winter, by the way, especially during a snowstorm. So there's that.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Where in Colby were you? Were you in the mountain time zone or were you in central? Because Colby is where the time zone splits.
I think it's central. I think we were on the central side.
Were you in the central side?
I think.
It's got to be so weird to live in one of those places where you, like, you drive across town to go visit your friend and it's an hour later or an hour earlier, you know, whatever it is.
I think. Yeah, I'm not sure. I actually don't remember.
How do you pick? I mean, I don't know. It would weird me out.
There's, like, one bowling alley in Colby, Kansas, and we went to the bowling alley. The bowling alley.
Nice.
It's I'm pretty sure it's called the Colby Bowling Alley. I'm not sure. But, yeah.
Cool. So, I do have one story around the holiday season. This one's a New Year's story. And,
oh, God, and, we're dumb.
And, yeah, I couldn't think the story up, and I don't know why, but now here I am going, oh, yeah, that's right. I even talked about telling this one. This one was very specifically planned for New Year's. Why? Brendan and I went to...
Oh, right.
New York. If you know anything about New Year's in the United States, New York is the place to be.
It's the place to go.
For New Year's.
To stand for 13 hours straight.
Yes, we did. Because we were those people. I had decided, and Brendan and I had decided before we went, we were like, this is one thing I just have to do. I have to do one time in my life. If I don't do it ever again, that's okay. And let me tell you, after having done it, I never want to do it again. But I will... still forever appreciate having done it once in my life. We went to New York and we went and stood in Times Square and watched the ball drop. And if you've never done this or know nothing about it, what it actually takes to be there, it is quite the experience. They're not doing it this year, obviously, which is interesting, but it is crazy. So you go there and they, you know, we had read enough in advance that we knew kind of what to expect. And they give you a general timeline of when some of the artists and stuff are going to perform in Times Square. But let me tell you, the experience when you're there is completely different. And we left the hotel at like 10 o'clock in the morning. We'd had breakfast, everything. We were prepped. We slept in enough where we were like, okay, we got to make it to midnight, obviously. And then we have to make it back to the hotel. Well, we had brought our backpacks with us, all this stuff. And because we figured, well, we're going to need water. You know, we were each bringing a camera along so we could take pictures and video and whatnot while we're standing there bored out of our minds. And we get down to Times Square. We got there, believe me, plenty early. And they said, well, you can't have your backpacks. We went, well, our hotel's in Queens. That's far away. I mean, it's on a map. It's not very far away, but when you have to navigate New York and find a subway and go all the way over to Queens and then walk to the hotel, I mean, we're talking like half an hour minimum each way. We knew we didn't have that kind of time if we wanted to actually be in Times Square. So we quickly researched and found a place nearby that did storage for luggage and baggage that was in the middle of New York. It was like 3 or 4 blocks from Times Square. We were like, okay, let's book it. Went and walked around. We finally find this little tiny door. I mean, little itty bitty teeny tiny door between these two businesses on this one block in New York City, Manhattan. And we had no idea. We were like, well, this is the address. So we went in. The only thing on the other side of this door is an elevator. We're like, okay. It says it's up on the 3rd floor or whatever. So we're like, well, up we go. Little rickety elevator takes us up. Sure enough. All that's there when you exit the elevator is this one big giant room full of luggage and a person at a desk. It is so creepy and weird. But we were like, look, we just need to store our bags here. We didn't know we couldn't take them into Times Square. And the person was like, cool, it's fine, whatever, $15, we'll store it. You pick it up whenever you're done. We're like, okay, perfect. So drop the bags, pay the fee, whatever. We book it back to Times Square. And we made it back in plenty of time. At this point, it's like 11 o'clock. In the morning. So they're starting to corral people. And what they do is they literally have these cages and the police coordinate all this, but each cage holds a certain amount of people basically. And they leave enough breathing room. They don't actually pack you in there. Not quite like it looks. People pack themselves eventually, mostly to keep warm, but actually there's a lot of free space. You'd be surprised. So we find ourselves in one of these cages, and the one thing that I determined pretty quickly is that we were some of the only people in there that spoke English.
Oh.
And so quickly, Brendan and I were like, oh, God, we're going to be bored. Like, there's nobody to talk to. We were like, oh, no. Like, we like looked around, and we were like, maybe we could have a conversation with these people. And then we hear them, and they're speaking, like, Russian. And then people over here are speaking Japanese. And then the people over there, they're speaking like Finnish. And then people over there, they're speaking French. And I'm like, oh, God. Brendan and I looked at each other. We're like, so nice weather, huh? So again, this is we were shut in by 11 o'clock in the morning. And then it starts counting down. Every hour, it does a 10-second countdown. And then it says, 12 hours to go. And it's like, oh, God, what did we just do? You know, you're standing in Times Square, and believe me, there's a lot of things to look at. It's fun people watching for a little while, but you can still only see so much because they put you in a pen with about, I'd say it's about 100 to 150 people. Maybe a little more than that, but not much. And we were right next to actually the stage where I think it was Carson Daly was doing his hosting for it. But the one thing that was really frustrating about that is, okay, we can see this happening, and it's really cool to be right next to that stage, but you can't hear anything. everything that's happening on TV is only broadcast on TV. The only thing that plays over the speakers in Times Square that is also played on TV is the musicians that come out. And the one thing they don't tell you is when that's going to happen. And so there's literally, like, no cues. We'll all just be standing there for, like, an hour. And then all of a sudden, we'll just start hearing music. We're like, what is happening? There was a stage all the way to our far right and all the way to our far left from where we were, the top end and the bottom ends of Times Square. And so we can't really see the people on stage because they're really far away. We can kind of tell they're there. But it would just start playing music. And we quickly determined that they would also do it twice, because they would do one rehearsal and then they would do their performance later in the evening for everybody to see. We just didn't know that, and we never knew when they were going to be on. This was the year that, was it Beyonce that really messed up her performance?
No, Mariah Carey.
Was it Mariah Carey, really?
Yeah.
Oh, Mariah Carey really messed up her performance.
She messed it up.
It was really bad, and I actually heard it when we were there. Like, I was like, something doesn't sound right. I was like, she's not singing. And I thought it was really strange.
What she was doing on stage at that point was trying to say, I can't hear. I can't hear the backing track. I can't hear.
Yeah.
But no one could hear her.
Yeah. And I remember all of this. And Brendan was totally oblivious to it. He was kind of like, well, I don't know, because I don't know what this song is or what's happening. And I was like, no, she's not singing. And she's supposed to be singing. And I'm pretty sure she said that she's like can't hear. And it sounded off and wrong. And sure enough, later on, like the next day, I looked it up and I was like, oh, man, yeah, that went really bad. And I feel bad. But also, it was, you know, there was so much going on around you. But at the same time, you're standing there for 13 hours. And 13 hours is a very, 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 very long time to do nothing but standing. They wouldn't let you sit either. Like, people started sitting on the ground, like on the concrete and stuff. And the police would walk around and be like, mm-mm, stand up. And we were like, oh, why? We're not doing anything. We don't have backpacks or anything. Why can't we just sit down?
That's also really bad for you, by the way, because you're standing on concrete.
Yes.
And I, even just me walking around my classroom, if I don't have the right shoes, my back starts to hurt.
Oh, yeah. I work in a concrete room, and I'll tell you that, yeah, if you stand for too long, it sucks. But we're standing in concrete the whole day, and it really gets really, really tiring. It really does. It gets really boring. Nothing's happening most of the day. You're just standing there with all of these strangers. And we tried really hard to, like, try to have conversations with a few people, but it was just so difficult because you couldn't even hear that well. There's so many people in Times Square. And we come to find out that it stretches for, like, 10 blocks. Like, we were actually in Times Square, and we consider ourselves pretty lucky to have gotten there early enough to actually do that. But yeah, it stretches for like 10 blocks, and there's literally like, I think there was 1.5 million people or something like that.
Jeez.
Yeah,
to watch. And we were like two of the maybe like 300,000 people that actually get to be in Times Square.
It's no surprise they're not doing it this year.
Yeah, it's really not.
Too many people.
Yeah. And so we actually got to watch the ball drop, which is way smaller in person. You can barely see it. I mean, we're standing in the middle, right smack in the middle of Times Square is where we were. We weren't on one end or the other. We were right smack in the middle, and we're staring straight at the ball, but it is just a tiny dot. That's all it is. And you watch it go down. It's really colorful. It's way bigger on TV. Hardly see it when you're there. And it's really cool anyways, but I remember when you're finally getting that close to midnight, everybody starts to finally get excited. They hand out the hats and all the free stuff that they give for everybody to wear so that it looks really presentable on TV, whatever. It's been Planet Fitness for the last, like, 8 years that has done the free gear, so they're all over everything. And so that's finally kind of exciting, but there's no place to go to the bathroom. The only food option, by the way, there is a food option, is McDonald's actually has a bunch of extra employees there from the McDonald's in Times Square, and they actually have runners. They just have a little tray. They ring it up for you, and then they run back to the McDonald's, pick up the food, and bring it back. They just tell you, stay right here by this side of the cage. Which in our cage, we had this big open area against one of the walls, because toward that open area, you can't see the ball or anything, because it was really close to one of the buildings. And the way that Times Square is angled, you can't see it. So that area was generally pretty open, so in order to get away from people, which we did quite often, You could just go over into this big giant open area. You're away from people. You can kind of walk around and whatnot. And that's where the McDonald's people would like run up, take your order, and run away. We didn't get anything.
I feel so bad for those people that have to work at that McDonald's.
Yeah, seriously, right?
Oh my gosh. I've worked at a Starbucks with a million little children. Like, I can't even imagine having a million grown adult people.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you know, obviously we had never done this before, but some of the other people had definitely done a lot of planning or had done it before, because we quickly realized that a lot of them wear, like, the adult diapers. Because, again, there's no bathroom. So a lot of people just wear the adult diapers, which is so weird. Like, stand in a crowd with a bunch of people wearing adult diapers. It's not comfortable. We were fine. And then, finally, you get around to midnight. You know, you've heard these performances. You've seen them on stage, these presenters, but you can't hear anything. They at one point came along the edge of our cage, and I'm sure we were in the background. We were like 3-4 people back from the front. We tried to be kind of up toward the front so that we would be seen, but whatever. And they were doing interviews with people that were right up by the edge of the cage, but you cannot hear anything because everybody's so loud in Times Square. And so you get through all this rigmarole. Finally, it's time for midnight. They start counting down the minutes as it goes. Like, every minute passes, they do a little special thing. Finally, you get to the last minute, and they start counting down from 30 seconds. And, you know, that's really exciting. It covers all of Times Square. The ads you've been watching for the last 13 hours are finally gone, and they're doing something else with the screens. And so those 30 seconds count down, and then everybody goes nuts, and it, you know, it's big celebration, the new year has come, and confetti goes everywhere. And then they play the two songs they always play at the ball drop right after midnight. And then I swear, I'm not even kidding, not even 3 minutes after the ball has dropped and New Year's has flipped, everybody leaves. 13 hours of standing there, and we will not stand there 1 minute more. As soon as that ball is dropped and they let us go, everybody leaves. That's not done, like, they don't kick you out, but trust me, nobody wants to be there anymore. And so everybody leaves. I mean, I remember, like, I think one of the songs was still playing, and we just found ourselves in an alley with everybody else leaving. We were like, nope, done. We made it to midnight. That's all we wanted to do.
Jesus.
And they block off the streets to the east and west of Times Square, and they block them off for like 10, 11 blocks in each direction so that everybody can just feed out onto those two blocks, because you can't go from one side of Times Square to the other. You cannot cross it. They make you go out to whatever the nearest street is. And so our bags were on the opposite side of Times Square from where we were. So we had to go out onto this one street, find our way all the way up like 10 blocks to finally cross the streets that lead into Times Square, to go down 10 more blocks on the other side to get to our bags, to finally go to the subway and then back to the hotel. I mean, I think we were back to the hotel by like 1:30, so it could have been worse. But
Jesus.
As soon as we did that, we crashed, and we had literally planned nothing for the next day. We were there for like 5 days, and we had all this extra stuff planned, but that day we were like, mm-mm, we will do whatever we want to do when we're actually finally up. And we slept until like 11 o'clock.
Nice.
But it was, I don't know, it was an experience. I will never forget it. I won't ever do it again. I did it once in my life.
Yeah,
that's all I need.
I'm good.
I don't need to do it.
If I ever go back to New York, which I wouldn't mind going back to New York to celebrate New Year's again, because they know how to party. Trust me. It is amazing. But I'd rather do something like a booze cruise. Even, I don't even drink, but I'd rather do that. It would probably be so much more fun, and you're only there for like 2 hours. So it's probably way better. And there's probably places to sit in a bathroom.
Yes. Yeah, I'm good. I don't like people, and I don't like standing forever. So yeah. There you go.
There you go. Yes, that is not for you.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, and happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays.
And we hope that we will get more stories for next time. For January, the listener theme is first aviation experiences.
So first flights, first
trips.
First time jumping out of an airplane. That's pointed.
I mean, yeah. any of the above.
First time anything related to aviation. First time you got to see an airplane. First time you got to, I don't know, go to an air show. First time, whatever it is, a first anything relating to aviation. Or whatever story.
Yeah. Also, if you just want to tell us a story that doesn't fit with the theme, go ahead and tell
it. We love those. Yeah. We had one today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you want to, you know, tell us a story that has nothing to do with a theme, we'll totally read that too. And stay safe. Stay healthy. Wear a mask, please. And
happy holidays.
And we will catch you guys next time.
Yeah.
Keep your speed up.
Thank you to everyone who submitted their story for this episode.
We are your hosts, Nick, Miranda, and Christy.
Our theme music was composed by Miranda and performed by all three of us, plus Leo.
Our logo is by Naomi from Not a Monster, Not a Boogeyman.
To submit your aviation story, go to hardlandingspodcast.com.
And check us out on social media. Catch you next time.